Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. My name is Phil Strum. So glad you're with us today. Our guest is one of the most recognizable wrestlers of the 80s and the 90s. One half of the Powers of Pain. It is the Warlord. I was pretty excited to get this one going. Warlord appeared at last year's 80s Wrestling Con. He was in a triple threat tag team match with the Now. You've seen both members of that team on the show before, as well as the Headbangers. And he just had such a nice speech for the fans after he was done. And I just said, you know, this guy just seems like a guy that I need to get on this show. Fast forward to now, he's appearing Saturday, May 4th, 2024, back at the 80s Wrestling Con, the fifth one that they're doing at the Men in Sports Arena in Morristown, New Jersey, for ISPW. So here we go right now with my interview with the Warlord. Honored to be joined today by a very recognizable wrestler from the 80s and 90s. It's the Warlord. Warlord, welcome to Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. How are you doing today?
Doing very good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for doing this. Let's get started with just a basic question for your fans out there. How are you doing and what are you up to these days?
Oh, I'm doing good. I stay very busy. I got a full-time job that keeps me real busy. And I still travel a lot. I do a lot of autograph sessions, and me and my partner still get in the ring together as the Powers of Pain, which were the last ones from the from our generation to actually still do that.
The reason I reached out to you to begin with, I saw you at last year's 80s Wrestling Con that ISPW put on in New Jersey. That one's coming up again, which is the reason why we're doing this. As part of the Rock and Wrestling actual card, you teamed up with the Barbarian as the Powers of Pain reunited, took up on a couple of guys I'm familiar with from Poughkeepsie, New York, the Now, and also the Headbangers in a triple threat. You had a really heartfelt speech at the end of that match to the crowd about appreciating the time you had in wrestling and the time that you had that day. Did you expect to feel the way that you did in that moment? Because it kind of took me by surprise. And you were somebody I never really, you're not somebody always known for, getting on the mic and kind of sharing like that.
It's towards the end of my career. As far as for going in the ring and that stuff, I don't know. It could be the end of this year. The body's starting to hurt a little bit more. It gets a lot tougher now in that. I enjoy it. I really do enjoy getting in front of the people. I enjoy entertaining them and that stuff, it gives me a thrill, but also I love it that I can see the people out there that they enjoy and that stuff, so I just want to kind of give back to the people and, thank them for everything, always being there and that stuff, being, especially, loving Barb and me all these years and that stuff, which we appreciate so much. I like to tell the people exactly how I feel, and I know it makes them feel good too when somebody does that for them.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. That was a real highlight for me, watching that show. What's the best part of those types of appearances for you?
Like I say, just go in front of the people, giving the people back, all the years we didn't get to meet all these people and everything else, they've been our fans all these years. So I like to get back by, be able to talk to them, and be able to perform for them and that stuff. And being there for them and that stuff, that they get to become a part of everything that that we're doing that day.
And what is it like for you to still get in the ring? How often are you doing it? And what does that feel like to get back in the ring with Barbarian as the Powers of Pain?
I love doing things with Bar. Bar's my brother. He'll always be my brother and that stuff, I mean, we've been together since 1987, I believe, man. That's, 37 years now? Wow. That's a long time. And you know what the funny thing is? We've never once argued. We've never once fought. We never once anything during that entire time. We've always got along. We just work everything out together and that stuff, and make it work. But it's just, like I say, I don't know how much longer. Like I said, everything gets a little bit tougher now. I'm getting ready to have a birthday next week, so I'll be turning another year older. that means a few more, aches in the bodies and a little more arthritis, but as long as I can try still getting in the ring and still doing things and giving the people a nice little show, I'm going to keep trying to do it.
Barbarian, tough as nails guy. Seems like a beautiful, beautiful guy. Just the nicest guy. What was it like meeting him for the first time? Did you guys click right away? And
you know,
what made the Powers of Pain work?
Well, the first time I ever met Barb, he was training at a gym I was training in Charlotte, North Carolina. And it was funny because he has his first son was like in his basket. And all you see was his arms and his legs hanging on the side of his basket. It's like, wow, what kind of kid is this? You know, that thing's a monster, you know? And, you know, at first we really didn't talk a lot and that stuff, you know, because we really didn't know each other that well. And then, you know, I went up to Kansas City. And when I came back from that, I developed a lot in that time. And Barb and me started talking a lot. And we started talking about, you know, maybe getting something together and working together as a tag because we both went together so well. Our size, our look, everything just went along really, really well.
And you guys were both in Crockett Promotions for a little while. I remember well when you debuted, seeing you with Baby Doll as your manager when I was a kid. And he was kind of with the Paul Jones army, I think, back then.
Yep.
when he was still Conga the Barbarian at that point, too. What was the experience like in that promotion for you?
The promotion was great. You know, I mean, it was wrestling, man. You wrestled when you were in Crockett Promotions. You know, a lot of good athletes. It taught me a lot about, you know, the sport. And of course, you know, all these guys come from so many different other, promotions and that stuff. And then they came to NWA and you kind of put everything together. So it's like a melting pot. And, like I say, it taught me a lot and helped me develop to where I was able to finally go to WWF.
It amazes me too. And maybe you could speak to this a little bit. The number of connections between the Road Warriors, Demolition, and the Powers of Pain. Now, I think he's still around today, and he's trained a lot of guys. But Eddie Sharkey, I believe, was the guy that trained you. Also trained Animal and Hawk. Also trained Smash, Barry Darso, I think, as well.
Yes, he did.
How did you get hooked up with him? And your entry into the business was through Animal? Is that right?
Yeah, Animal. I used to train at the gym in Plymouth, Minnesota, and that was actually partly owned by Animal and Hawk at the time. And so I was training there all the time, and every time Animal would come home, he'd kind of look at me, and he'd come over and talk to me and say, hey, big brother, man, you know, you should think about getting professional wrestling. I was like, I don't know, man. It took about five times. He finally talked me into it, and he said, I got somebody that, you know, that can get you trained that's really good. He trained us. He trained one of the our acts of or I mean Smash of Demolition, and that's a Barry, and you know, he'd be really good for you, and I think it'd be great for you, you know. And then you know, and also, you know, Joe's the one that gave us his permission to do the Powers of Pain. He thought it was a great idea, and us actually being bigger than them, it was even better because they could actually become true baby faces that they always wanted to be.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, too. All three teams kind of did very good business with one another at different times and different promotions. You guys got the Road Warriors in Crockett. Then you got the Demolition in WWE. Demolition ended up meeting the Road Warriors in WWF later on. What was the training with Sharkey like? Because he does have a crazy list of guys, Bob Backlund, Rick Rude, like Nikita Koloff. And there was such a pipeline of huge guys that he was supplying to some of the promotions back then.
Yeah, you had Scott Norton. You had Kurt Henning. You had Northern Barbarian, which is also the Berserker. I mean, you had a lot of guys that came out of there and that stuff. You know, just, I don't know, maybe everybody says, man, it had to be in the water up there, you know. Well, you know, during the winters when it gets 30 below, you know, you got two choices and that stuff. You either stay in the house or you go out and you work your butt off because it's so cold. You're going to put that size of weight out in the winter. Yeah. And you always put on but a good 30 pounds in the winter all the time. So you always put on a lot of size every winter, you know. You know, Eddie, you know, I like Eddie. But Eddie, most of the time, Eddie was never even around. Eddie would come in. He'd be half drunk from the night before. He would show us a couple things. And then he would take off and go get a cup of coffee. Meanwhile, we're beating the heck out of one another. Our chest is black and blue. Everything else. And he comes back and goes, that was a good job, guys. Looks good out there. You know, really, really good. Now let's learn how to work a little bit now.
But it seems like he had some of the connections to get people, you know, because everybody in Minnesota, it seems like in that era, was either went through the Vern Gagne camp or went through Eddie Sharkey, and I think he also owned a club or something like that too, where some of the people bounced at different times too. So that was a way to get. But I mean, when you look at that pipeline with yourself and Barry Darso and Nikita Koloff, both road warriors, and it's like just these absolute monsters.
You know, there were
coming out of his camp. And actually, I actually saw shortly before the world kind of shut down in 2020, I saw Backlund at a signing. And while I was in the middle of talking to Bob Backlund, Road Warrior Animal was still with us then. And Animal just comes over to him, huge hug. Like, he's like, "Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you." I'm like, "I'm not going to get in the way of Road Warrior Animal, you know, greeting somebody. Are you kidding me?"
Yeah.
But yeah, what a great group of wrestlers. So you grew up on AWA then?
Yeah, I grew up AWA. Actually, it's funny because when I was in fifth grade, I was an AAU champion across the country for wrestling.
Oh, wow.
And it's funny that Vern Gagne put me on his show as talking about me as being a champion in the United States, AAU and that stuff, you know. That's when I met Vern and all that stuff on the AWA show. And that's, but I was watching, you know, Billy Robinson, Nick Bockwinkel, you know, all those great wrestlers of back in the Crusher and all that, man.
Yeah.
It was great. I used to watch it every Sunday morning, man, religious.
Who was in charge of Jim Crockett Promotions booking wise when you came in? Was that Dusty Rhodes or was it Ole?
Okay. Yep, Dusty. Yep.
So what was your interactions with Dusty Rhodes like?
Listen, I thank Dusty for giving me an opportunity to come into NWA and that stuff. You know, I mean, Animal said, you know, "Terry, I want you to take a couple pictures and that stuff," you know, and because I want to bring him down to Dusty Rhodes and that stuff and show him down the NWA. So I went ahead, took a couple pictures, god-awful pictures. But Dusty liked them and must have seen something in me someplace, you know, and he gave me an opportunity to come down to Charlotte and then give it a shot.
So I could see you and Barbarian, in addition to your, you know, your legendary run as the Powers of Pain, I could see you guys being somewhat of a sellout in the gym, too. What kind of lifts were you guys doing in your peak?
We were from another planet in this galaxy. So strong back then, but you know, we had no injuries. We're young, testosterone's high as can be and that stuff, you know. I would go into a gym and I would just start working. I'd go to about 2.25 on curling, and I'd do it for like 12, 13 reps in the gym, and about half the gym would clear out after that. Not that I didn't mean for it to be that way, just they were embarrassed because most of them couldn't even do 2.25 for 4 or 5 reps, you know. And here I am curling it like crazy, you know. I mean, we went into the Gold's Gym in Venice, California. And, of course, you know, out there, that's the mecca of bodybuilding. That's where everything starts. And Barb and me went in there. We put 315 behind the neck, and we were cranking out like 15 reps. And the whole gym just stopped and looked at, my God, I didn't know wrestlers were that incredibly strong, you know. I mean, you know, I could bench the world and that stuff back then, you know. Barb, he could incline the world back then. We were just, like I say, you know, us, Animal, we were just on another planet back then.
So you mentioned before you had an amateur wrestling background too. So was it amateur wrestling? Were you into bodybuilding, weightlifting? What was kind of your athletic path into wrestling?
I really wasn't into any of that stuff. I really wasn't into bodybuilding. I just really wanted to just take care of my body and that stuff and try as getting much of it as I possibly could. That's what I wanted.
Any other sports that you played or anything like that before getting into pro wrestling?
Oh yeah, I played football, and I went to a University of Northern Iowa as a starter, as a defensive tackle. I went ahead and I played basketball in high school. They recruited me to get into wrestling, but I really didn't like the coach that much, so I just kind of stuck with basketball at that time. You know, before that, I played soccer, where we were a three-time state champion in Minnesota and Bloomington and that stuff, you know. And then my coaches retired, and then that's where I went over to football then. But I played all kinds of sports.
Were any of your old teammates surprised or reach out to you once they see you as the warlord and kind of surprised to see you in the spot that you're in?
Well, all my some of my classmates back from when I graduated, which is a long, long time ago, got a hold of me down here and that stuff where I live here in Florida. And from what I hear next year, I think WrestleMania is going to be in Minneapolis next year, from what I'm hearing. And if that's true, they all want to come to it and that stuff next year for the signings at WrestleCon. That stuff. So you can come meet me and that stuff again. And it's funny because right after I started wrestling, all my football team from University of Northern Iowa came to a show in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and surprised me. They came back and said, "Terrison, man, what are you guys doing here?" And, of course, you know, they got to meet all the guys, which they just loved and that stuff. And they couldn't believe it because I told them when I was in college, we used to watch WWF on TV when it first came out. And I told the guys, I said, "I would like to try that someday, you know." And they said, "Yeah, right." And here I was there.
Nice. So when you guys became the Powers of Pain to feud with the Road Warriors, you know, you had the look with the makeup and the hair and the gear together. What do you think made the Powers of Pain stand out from out of the pack of those three teams?
The size, our size. Barbie had the look, but we also had that size. We were monsters. I mean, I was 330, 335. Barb was 315. You know, Barb had traps up to his goddamn ears, and I had the huge biceps and everything else and that stuff, you know. And like I say, our we just went together so well, you know. Which I never take away from the Road Warriors, because they're always gonna be the goats. They're always gonna be number one ever. No one ever touched them.
Yeah, and they had the look right out of the gate that everybody just, you know, it was just shocking. Demolition, like, they were actually both really good wrestlers, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
And in other characters for many, many years, too. So always, always enjoyable, all that stuff. So you were around Barbarian a lot. Were you around Haku a lot, too, or the two of them together? And did you feel completely safe?
Well, you know, because Barbie traveled together, and even when I went singles, you know, you're not around each other so much because you're always on the go all that time, you know.
Right.
You know, Haku, I always got along with great. Haku's a brother to me. You know, of course, you know, he's him and Barb are relatives, you know. I just, like I say, you know, I've always got along with Haku, and like I say, I love the guy, and that's what he's a great guy.
I would just think being between those two guys, as big as you are anyway, like, you can feel like the safest guy anywhere with Haku and the Barbarian on either side of you.
Yeah. Everybody always asks me, you know, they always go, "Who would you want with Barbarian to you as a third tag team partner?" I said, "Of course, Haku. Haku would be perfect. I mean, who the heck's going to touch that team?"
Right. And they were both in sumo together before they got into wrestling too. So
yes, they were.
Yeah. Did you happen to see that video of Haku seeing the Shockmaster video for the first time?
No, never got to see
it. Oh, it is. It was on the latest Dark Side of the Ring, the first one that they did on John Tenta. But Haku was like, "No, I've never seen that video before." And they play him the Shockmaster video. And it's just about a minute and a half straight of Haku laughing. And the more he considers what happens, he's laughing even harder. And then he's like, "I love you, Fred, but I'm sorry." So you got to check out that video. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
Any other veterans who were some of your like mentors as you were in each stop? Were there people that you relied on for advice, and or people you would constantly go to that you wanted to watch your matches or your interviews or anything like that?
Not really. I pretty much Animal Hawk was my mentor, and you know, coming to WWF and being lucky enough to get a great run with Demolition, I learned a lot from Bill and Barry. You know, because they've been around it for such a long time, and especially Bill, you know, Bill's been around the business for so long, and all these different characters, he knows so much about the business. You know, I've been lucky enough to be around the best there is, and it's helped me a lot.
Did you always kind of figure you'd end up with WWF because of the look?
Yeah, sooner or later. It's funny because when I was going through the schooling with Eddie Sharkey got us to a show at the Met Center, which is where the WWF wrestled, and that's when they came in town. And he got us backstage, and I got to meet Hogan. And Hogan looks at me, says, "Brother," he said, "you're a big brother." He said, "Who knows, someday he might be in the WWF someday." And down the road, all of a sudden, here I am on WWF and that stuff, you know. I mean, it was pretty cool.
I think you had a title match with him, too, at the NASA Coliseum.
Yes, I did. I had several with him, man. What a great guy to work with, man. If you want to get instant goosebumps, work with Hogan.
What's it like being in the ring with him? What do you kind of like? Because his feel for the crowd is, to me, what makes him. People argue over, oh, you know, this person's a good worker, this person's a good worker. To me, the definition of a good worker is somebody who knows what the crowd wants.
Yep.
So what do you look for when you're in there with Hogan? Are you leading? Is he leading? Like, how do you get to the finish line, I guess?
He's the boss.
Yeah.
he's, he's a Golden Goose fan. You know, whatever he wants, that's what it is and that stuff, you know. You know, it's just so easy to work because for a big guy that's 300 pounds, he can crawl on that mat and get sympathy from the people. And I don't know anybody that's 300 pounds who can crawl on a mat and get sympathy. And if you look at all his matches, every match that he does, it's the same comeback. But it doesn't matter because that's what the people want to see at every match. He's going to get up. He's gonna Hulk up. He's going to block your punch, hit you, block your punch, hit you, block your punch, hit you. He's going to go and throw you in. He's going to give you the big boot. You're going to go down. He's going to get the ropes and cut the big, big leg across you. And like I say, every match the same. It don't matter because the people go nuts. And you know, when he comes to that crowd, to the ring, I mean, it's just, it's amazing on that stuff because it's like, you just get, when he climbs up in that apron and all those photographs start going up, he rips his shirt up, man, all you got is goosebumps. I mean, you literally have goosebumps down every part of your body and you just black out for about 30 seconds. Everything was black.
Wow.
You know, and then you come back, you go, God, man, I'm in the ring with Hulk Hogan. I better do my stuff right, man, today.
Yeah. And I think he always knew when was the right time to do that stuff too.
Yeah.
Did you like being the good guy tag team when you started in WWF as the Powers of Pain? Did you think that was going to last a while?
I wish it would have lasted actually a little bit longer. I think it would have been nice. Maybe a little bit better for us and that stuff, you know. But it was also an opportune time at that time with the 8-man tag in the
Survivor Series.
Second one. Right, yep. in Ohio.
Yep.
And it was a right time to probably make the turn. And as so, although it was very tough at first because everybody thought that actually Fuji was turning babyface now.
I did.
Yeah. And the problem was for the next 3 weeks, there was no TV. So now everywhere we were going, all the people that watch that thought we were babyface of Fuji. So we were wrestling every night. Everybody's cheering us and going crazy. And we're supposed to be the heels. We actually had to work twice as hard every night where we do our match and then we come back and have to jump on a babyface and beat the heck out of them and leave them lay. So people understand we're heels. Yeah. So I said, man, we're did double the goddamn work because of the goddamn turn, you know. There's a lot of work now.
I was so into you guys when the double turn happened. I just figured Fuji was the babyface because I was sticking with you guys. And I remember, I think it was Paul Romo. You had to jump on the one show I was watching to establish the turn. Did you spend a lot of time with Fuji and what was he like?
Fuji taught me a lot. He taught me the ins and outs. He taught me a lot about the ins and outs of the WWF. After our matches, you know, we go over the match, we get in the car and we go over a match for a little before Fuji started drinking his beers and had something relaxing, you know. But we go over just to, you know, make sure that we can, the things that maybe weren't quite right, we would try to write them next time and that stuff, you know. But he helped me, he also taught me how to be a big man and how to work it, which also Barb did too. Barb really taught me a lot and all that, how to be a good big man and that stuff. So, you know, I'm lucky I got two very good mentors in the car all the time with me.
Did you think that they broke up the team too soon? And what was the thought behind that? And I guess, how did you feel with the new look and the pairing with Slick that came out of that?
Yeah, I did think that they broke up the team a little bit too quick and that stuff, you know. I wish it would have gone longer and that, you know, because we were getting such a good run in that stuff, you know, and the people really liked it in that. But, you know, there's nothing you can do. The power of the pencil is stronger than anything else out there. So,
yeah.
You know, I like the new look that they gave me. I like the mask. Not the first mask. I like the second mask. First mask sucked. I couldn't stand it. It'd fall off. This and that didn't fit right. It was humongous. And then they flew me to Upper New York to a place that they had put plastic Paris on half my face. I had to sit there for a bunch of hours before it would harden on my face, going through a straw. And then they took it off, and that was really a nice mask, that silver one.
Nice. In your WWF career, you had, I believe, two WrestleMania matches. You had the 3-on-2 with Fuji and Demolition at 5, and then you had the Bulldog at the Battle of the Full Nelson at WrestleMania 7. You were part of that Survivor Series team, not only the one when the turn, but also the one that stayed intact and won the Visionaries. You had the SummerSlam debut at MSG. You had, of course, what stood as the fastest Royal Rumble elimination in history for about 3 decades.
Yeah.
And what stands out to you the most, you know, just moment wise, as you look back on the time in WWF or any matches that from your time that you were particularly proud of?
You know, I love the one in Trump Plaza, of course, with Demolition. That was a lot of fun, especially about doing Fuji. That was really a good time being in the ring with Mr. Fuji and that stuff. You know, I mean, that's not because Fuji's, you know, so big in the business and that. And of course, just being at Trump Plaza was really cool. And of course, the one with Davey Boy, that was an honor because Davey was such a great wrestler. He's, you know, big guy the way he was built in SF, yet he was still so agile and you know, he could just wrestle so good. And I mean, because he'd been wrestling since he was so young. He was an incredible athlete in that stuff, you know. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed it a lot. You know, I enjoyed all those things. Every time I would get in the ring, I enjoyed it because it's something I really loved doing at that time.
I liked on the Survivor Series one. Those 10-on-10 Survivor Series matches were complete chaos, but they were so fun to watch as a fan. I just remember when you guys are dusting off Fuji on the floor, and the two conquistadors were the last two guys in the ring, and they're jumping up and down like, we're going to win by countdown. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. But then you guys obviously put an end to that.
Pretty quickly. Who would ever thought the conquistadors would be the last ones in with us?
I thought that's a fun touch to do at a Survivor Series, though, because it gives you something you're not going to expect.
That's right. It was great.
And then when you're still out there on like 7 on the count outside the ring, it's like, wait a minute, what's going to happen here? They gotta move here. Yeah. So we're going to move to something we call the three count now. It's going to be three quick questions and your answers. So the Warlord is a memorable name. Were there any other names you remember that you were thinking about using that ended up on the cutting room floor, so to speak?
Not really. Pretty much Warlord. Animal Me sat down at the gym in Minnesota. He said, Terry, we got to come up with a name. We started going through. He said, man, you're so much like us. We're going through us on Animal. Goes, Warlord. And I said, wow, I like that, man. He said, that's never been taken, man. It's Warlord it is. And that's what we did.
So no real, you know, process. Just kind of you picked it and it sounded good. And you,
yeah, it sounded did you great. Ever,
you didn't go by that many other names in your career either.
I was actually called when I first started wrestling Terry Penske. Oh, God. That was God awful.
That one did not stick.
No.
Second question, if you had to show someone three Warlord matches, which ones would you pick and why?
Number one, I would, of course, pick Davey Boy and me from WrestleMania 7. I would pick me and Bret Van Hart for the Intercontinental belt. I can't tell you which one because we did a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But I would definitely one of those because Bret was such an incredible worker. If you could work a match with Bret, you shouldn't be in the business. Because he was just that great a worker and that stuff, you know. And, of course, you know, us working along with Demolition all that long. But also another one that was incredible is us and the Rockers. Us and the Rockers really hit it off great. Gosh, I mean, our size, the way they could fly. If you saw those matches, even Hogan came up and he said, you know what, guys? I'm going right before intermission. You guys are going last because I can't follow the stuff you guys are doing. I mean, the bumps that Marty and Sean were taking for us, I mean, I threw him up, Sean, in a backdrop in Madison Square Garden. He had the light above the ring that night. I mean, they just flew, you know, and the people just went crazy.
I was actually just going to bring up that backdrop because I was thinking to myself, I know one of you guys backdropped, and I thought it was Sean.
I gave it to Sean in Madison Square Garden, and I turned around, where's Sean? I'm looking around. I said, boom, it's oh my God. Wow. Goodness. That was amazing.
Yeah. And he's obviously an amazing performer.
Yeah.
Yes, too. You guys probably had a few with the Hart Foundation back then too. I'm trying to think of any, how many 2-on-2s did you have with them? How many tag teams did you have with the two?
We had several with them. Not a whole lot, but we did have some of them.
Yeah. And then the last question was just about that Royal Rumble. Did you get paid a full match's pay for that Royal Rumble
when
you
walked in the ring? As everybody else, that was in the whole goddamn time. you know, everybody's going, my guy, I said, you know what? I said, listen, I still think I hold the record. If you really look at it, I still think I hold the record on it, you know. But the really cool thing about it, who did I get knocked out by and who did he get knocked out by? I got knocked out by the biggest name ever in professional wrestling, which is Hulk Hogan.
Right.
And I'll take that any day of the week over the one he got knocked out by.
I think he got tossed by the Boss Man in that one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
But it was just so perfect, too. It's like you step into the ring, you get all the way in, And then, like, you have to go all the way over the top, too. Yep. And that's not easy for a guy that's your size to do it that fast.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, I didn't know how to do it that day. I had no clue. And anyway, I said, "How am I? I don't know how to do this. I've never done this in my life." I practiced all afternoon, man. I was wearing my my pants and that stuff that I was wearing that day, man. I split them in half. But I learned to go over that top rope. Fuji taught me to go over that top rope. He just kept hitting me. And I finally learned. I got it down. And when I came right down, let it right on my feet on the outside, you know, and it was perfect, you know.
And then it was shown on WWE television for another, you know, and it still showed on that clip when they do the Royal Rumble by the numbers. Well, the Warlord had the record for this many years. They still show you in, out. And sometimes they'll speed it up so it looks even more ridiculous. But it's still a memorable moment. And all those huge cards that you were a part of back then, it's gonna, you know, you were such a big part of things that it was great to have you on. I'll just mention again, it's Saturday, May 4th. At the Men in Sports Arena, Morristown, New Jersey. Thanks to Tommy Fierro for setting this up. The 80s Wrestling Con that you'll be, again, a part of with your tag team partner, the Barbarian. Yep. Are you stepping in the ring this time, or do you know yet?
No, we're going to step in the ring. I wish we could get Hakuda going with us. I would love that.
That would be.
We did that one time before, and the whole crowd just started chanting, "You still got," and they're all bowing to us, and it was just such a incredible moment and feeling and that stuff, you know. I would love it. I don't know, that would be up to Haku and that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I told all the people last year, I don't know if after this year I'll be here. I guess I'll tell the people, here I am again, guys. I'm getting back every 1 year, you know.
So
I don't know. I don't know what my speech will be.
I was amazed by your speech, and I was amazed to see the Barbarian at this point in his career getting up for a double vertical suplex that he got up on that. So
I'm so nervous for Barb sometimes. He's still a nut, man. He still does all these big things. I'm like, Barb, brother, man, you know, we're older. I don't want to see you get hurt bad or something bad happen, you know, but it's just the way Barb is, man. That's who he is, and that's who he's always going
to
be.
And I know, like I said, I know the guys that gave him that suplex, and I went up to them after that show. I was like, just double suplex the Barbarian? What do you do? Like, hey, you know, like, that's what we did.
That's what Barb wanted, and if he wants it, you do it.
You know, they had such great things to say about you guys, too, and being in there with you guys. So, The Warlord, thank you so much for doing this today. Honored to be joined by you. Check him out at 80s Wrestling Con, and good luck with everything you got going on in your life, and I look forward to seeing you at 80s Wrestling Con.
All right, it'll be fun seeing you again and that stuff, you know, and it'll be a good time. It's a great show. You get to meet a lot of legends there and that stuff, you know, which is a lot of fun in that. And you get to see my partner me, the Barbarian Warlord, Powers of Pain, get back in the ring and do our thing, and hopefully not get hurt.
Yep. All right. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks again, everyone, for joining me this week on Under the Ring Pro Wrestling Conversations. I'd like to thank the Warlord for joining me this week. I'd also like to thank Tommy Fierro from ISPW for setting this up. Again, it's Wrestling Con 5, Saturday, May 4th, 2024, Men in Sports Arena, Morristown, New Jersey. Follow me on Twitter at Under the Ring for the latest guest announcements, and have a great week, everyone.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.